Robert, hello, welcome to our podcast.
Hi, Sven, thank you.
How's it going?
Well, it's dynamic as always in the startup world.
In the startup, yeah, you are a startup. But before we start, what's your background? How did you start? How did you get here?
Well, in general, I started in IT and financials. I started in banking basically 23 years ago. 23 years ago in one smaller bank, I was working as a system administrator. And for the next 5 or 6 years, I was basically working as a small, as a head of a small department that was responsible for internet banking and mobile banking. So back then, you know, everybody was not only full stack developers, we were also administrators, and we were doing all the stuff that today multiple departments are doing. So I was in charge for a small department that was doing internet and mobile banking, so digital channels. And from then on, I moved forward to another bank, another position where I was head of IT division. It was a more even more responsible position. So I was in charge of the whole IT department. So for the next 5 years, I was actually making sure that, you know, the bank has a proper ID required for operations. So this was very challenging. I was only 28 or something when I became.
Up with 28 now.
Yeah. So you know, yeah, don't do it. Don't go into banking. You're not going to be super happy at this moment. Basically for the first 12 years of my career, I've been in banking, in IT, in banking. And after that, I basically decided to switch teams. Banking kind of started. I started to realize that it's quite slow. You know, innovation is quite slow. So I switched the team to a private sector. Banking is private sector, but let's call it a pure IT private sector. So back then, I was 2 years a member of the board of one IT company, integration company. And then after those 2 years, I completely, you know, changed everything came to a prosperitive startup as a CTO. So for the next 5 years, I was a CTO of a Swedish startup, which had operations in Croatia, in Zagreb. And yeah, that's when I joined the startup world and everything around, you know, innovation and starting something new. I really liked it. And after 5 years of that experience, I figured out that, you know, well, maybe I can do something on my own with a couple of guys that were ready to, you know,
and then you
risk.
And then you started, founded Identium.
Yes.
I saw that you were on Money Motion conference.
Yes.
That's a fintech conference here in Croatia. How was it?
Oh, it was great. Kudos to guys who organized it for the second time. It was good the first time. Now it's, you know, it was amazing to build something so great from zero in 2 years. It's amazing. So the conference itself is very good. The region needed this kind of conference, definitely.
So what are the latest trends there that people are talking about? What's happening right now in fintech?
Oh, it's super hard to say, you know, because fintech means so many different things, and it's such a large scale and large, you know, large pot of different stuff that's cooking in there. You know, the usual suspects, I guess, are always new cryptos and the new approaches to using the blockchain in the fintech world. But that's kind of, you know, even I would say that's mainstream now. Embedded banking, embedded banking is something that more people are talking about. But I mean, to me personally, I think that the biggest next big thing could be digital euro. This is not at the moment hot topic. But it's definitely something that could change fintech industry significantly, if not, you know, like radically. I think that digital euro is one of the very big topics for the fintech, at least, of course, in Europe. And it will influence very strongly many startups who are probably not even aware that.
We're talking about CBDC.
Yes.
Here. Yeah. All right, and that's, you know, you actually come here into play as Identium is a company that deals with digital IDs, digital wallets. So what do you actually do? That's a big question. Yeah. A lot of.
So what do you guys actually do, right?
A lot of things.
Yeah, a lot of things. You know, depending on who you ask, right? So basically, we do different things for two different, very different groups. One group is citizens, right? So for the citizens of, at the moment, European Union, we provide digital wallets. So it's a service directly from Identium to you as a citizen of European Union, where a digital ID wallet is something where you can store securely different types of personal data that are strongly relatable to your identity. So think of it as some sort of super hyped digital ID in cloud, where you can store other things beyond just your basic data, name, last name, national ID number. You can store different types of data related to your identity, your diploma, your driver's license, and so forth. So this is ID wallets. This is one service that we provide directly to citizens. The other services are for the group, for companies, right? So we provide services for business entities, which is the whole point. We strategically are not making money from citizens. Most, if not all, services to citizens are and will be free. So we are making money from our B2B services. And our B2C, B2B services are on top, based on top of this concept of ID wallets. So we basically provide currently three different services. One is Identify. Identify enables companies to remotely identify you in a very credible way and legally compliant. Second service is Sign, which allows companies to send a document for your legally valid signature. And the third service is FinCheck, which again allows companies to check your financial credibility in some different segments as they require for some service like a loan or something like that. In all three of those services, citizen is always in the middle of the process. So this is the key thing to understand, that nothing happens without an explicit consent of a person in charge of his or her wallet, right? So this is not something that companies can read without citizens knowing. There's always a citizen in the process who says, yes, I allow this bank to read this data because I want this service.
Yeah, they need to be compliant.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
What are the industries that, you know, you cover?
The platform Identium as itself is industry neutral, right? So it doesn't cover any specific industry because, you know, digital identity is basically, you know, a baseline for everything. It's a building block for all industries. You know, you can use it and shouldn't use it in tourism. You can use it in security industry when, you know, for example, recently we had problems with people on the football matches that were doing creating problems. Credible identity could help a lot, right? When they are coming to the match to be sure that they can, you know, identify themselves as people who bought the ticket. I mean, financial industry is a very natural candidate. We at Identium started with financial industry, so our services are kind of well-known in financial industry because me personally and the other co-founders also, you know, have good understanding of financial industry, and that's where we started sales, you know, because we know what the industry needs and how the industry works. But in general, Identium is a generic technology for any industry that requires digitalization of identity processes based on identity. You know, almost all industries require something based on identity. Gaming industry maybe doesn't require full identity, but requires some portions of how old you are or where are you from or something like that.
Right. You're a startup, but not a typical one.
Yes.
You're dealing with quite some difficult things. You know, you need approvals from higher bodies, from institutions. So how do you handle that? That's something really, let's say, sensitive. I can imagine, yeah, you know, it probably gives you a lot of headaches, you know, with getting all the approvals and everything.
Exactly. Well, you know, I try to do some physical exercise, not to get too strained, but yeah, it's very stressful. We do require a lot of certification from a lot of different bodies. Basically, we have been certified with everything that we could at the moment. But some new regulation is coming along, which will require next certification. And also, you know, to be quite honest, the state national agencies in Croatia are they're not against, but they're not helpful either. So, you know, we don't have a culture in Croatia for agencies to help private sector. As, for example, we saw very clearly, as I saw very clearly, Sweden does, right? So, in advanced countries of Europe, private and public sector work hand in hand to create something new for the citizens and something better. In Croatia, I'm afraid that it's, you know, public sector is doing its thing and private sector is doing its thing, and it's not a lot of help. And
but the private sector realizes the value of digital transformation more than the public.
Exactly. I mean, the pressure is definitely there. Look, for example, a large or medium or even a small bank, you know, everybody at this time is very aware that young people do not want to go to branches anymore, right? They don't want to go to branch offices. They don't want to sign papers. They don't want to, you know, like spend 1 hour to just give the here it's I or her ID to someone. They want to do it, you know, for a young person, bank is just an app that can be done, that should be downloadable from the store, right? And so the pressure from the private sector is very clear that the public sector should do something better than we have at the moment in Croatia. But the speed of innovation in public sector is not nearly, you know, good enough. So, I mean, that's basically why we exist, because we wanted to tackle a problem that nobody tackled in Croatia in a way that should be tackled.
How did you actually get the idea? Because it's really a brave idea.
Or maybe stupid.
Both.
It's usually that way, right? Usually brave people can be considered stupid from another perspective. We got a lot of insight because we traveled a lot when I and my colleagues were working for a Swedish startup, right? So we traveled a lot throughout European cities, and we visited the clients in Europe from this startup. And talking with clients, we kind of, you know, had this very, very esoteric and really rough and unclear feeling that there is something missing, right? There is something missing in this technological stack of identity of society as such, you know. It took a lot of time for it to become more clear to us, but the first push was definitely this visiting other clients throughout the Europe and figuring out that, you know, in some very hard to tackle back then way, we felt that everybody's having the same problem, you know, and even the advanced societies are still having the same problem. The problem is how to easily identify someone, you know, who has never been to the bank, to the telco, blah blah blah, online. So, yeah, that's the initial push.
Yeah, because when I had the pre-recording meeting with Katarina, the head of business at your company, I said I opened a couple accounts in different, you know, fintech apps companies, and it's always painful, you know, when I have to take a photo of my ID, and then you have the little square. Then you can, you know, pinpoint. It's difficult to get the ID in the field, and then after that you have to, you know, do the 3D scanning and everything else.
Exactly.
And then the last time I did it, the scanning was inverted, so you know I couldn't. It took me about 30 seconds to get my face in that oval shape, and you know One of the things that also helps is Decode is a software agency. We had many, you know, fintech projects. Is, you know, KYC, yeah. Whether if it's, let's say, a crypto exchange, a banking app, or something else, it takes, you know, quite a long time to somebody, you know, to take their photo, their ID, and so
exactly.
on, and, you know, to confirm the ID of that person, that actually is a true person. That's where you jump
exactly.
in.
Exactly. That's where we jump in, and that's where we, you know, figured out that we should jump in 5 years ago. Well, as you described it, yes, this is the key problem that we realized exists from day one. We call it Valley of Death because, you know, you have to go through Valley of Death every time that you onboard to a different provider, right? So, I mean, the serious provider, if it's a provider that is required to do to be compliant with anti-money laundering regulation, then the provider of this service needs to go through those steps. You know, they cannot be simpler. Banks, telcos, you know, insurances, cryptos, crypto exchanges, all of them have to go through this process. So our idea is, well, why don't the citizens go through this once, create their identity, and then just reuse it every time they onboard to different providers? So basically, ID Wallet was born as an idea in 2018, much, much, much before there was even a word for it, right? So now everybody's talking about ID wallets because European Commission called it ID wallets in eIDAS 2.0 regulation, draft of eIDAS 2.0, which became public somewhere in 2020, 2021, I don't know. So basically we figured it out that this is the way for the society to go 3 years earlier. And when we started, we called it profiles because we didn't have a word for it. We called it ID profiles. But after 2 years, when we saw that European Commission is calling it ID wallets, well, we changed it now. You know, we changed the name for the same thing. And from then on, we call it ID wallets. So, but basically, you know, the as you described, the key thing to resolve here is how to make easier for people to credibly prove their identity when they're onboarding to some service. And it's such a huge problem. And it's a different problem in every country. We in Croatia have a separate problem on top of this problem because we don't have a mobile or smart ID like some nations have. Like, for example, you know, you have Belgium, It's Me. It's Me is an electronic ID scheme. You have a similar scheme in Denmark. You have a similar scheme in Scandinavian countries. A bit different. Bank ID is something a bit different, but in essence, it's electronic ID. So basically, in these countries, you can use a national ID to onboard to a web portal, right? To wherever. So, you know, you already have your mobile application and the process works in a way that you just log into something like you log in with Facebook or you log in with Google. In those countries, you log in with your national ID to whatever service because the authentication packages are quite cheap for private entities to use.
So it streamlines the whole process.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, in Croatia, we don't have that at all. So we have a skewed vision of what the problem is because, we don't even have that layer. Now, we are at the start of creating a layer in Croatia with public infrastructure, right? So the typical example for that is AKD, so the company that provides public state-owned company that creates national ID cards, right? And they have this branch or brand or whatever, Certilia, which is maybe known to more literate, IT-literate people. The problem is that this per se is not good enough to digitalize the society. You know, the concept is okay. It's eID is secure. It definitely needs to, you know, be spread in the society. But as itself, it's not strong enough as a concept to digitalize the society, because a lot of people were simply never created because the process of creating it and using it is too complex for an average citizen. And even the much more advanced countries never digitalize themselves based only on such a technology. So you need a next level technology, a smart ID or a mobile ID, or and a technology that allows initial identification that is much simpler. And you know, the usability and the user experience that is much better and much simpler. And a state doesn't know how to make you good UX, right? So, you know, people working in public and administration don't know how to do a good user experience. So, you know, that's where we believe that we step in Croatia. In more advanced countries in Europe, which already have EID systems, we are building services on top of those, on top of that elementary service, because we are not going to be able to sell our EID in, you know, Netherlands, because they already have it. But we can build on top of it services for remote identification, services for electronic signing, and even for financial checks of financial data.
We're going to get a bit technical. What's the technology behind it? And I know that we can have a whole other episode about that, but just in a couple of sentences.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very streamlined enterprise stack used in...
A lot of data.
A lot of data.
Okay, now that you mentioned a couple of countries in Europe, what's the future of digital IDs here in Europe? There's a regulation that's coming up.
Yes.
That by 2030, 80% of all citizens in the European Union should, should have a digital ID.
Yes. Well, that's what they would want, right? That's the idea. Now, what will happen in practice, nobody knows, but the initiative is there, and you know, it has to be, obviously it has to be motivational for European citizens. That's why they, you know, kind of set this 80% by 2030, because all the goals need to be motivational, because hard to achieve, right? EIDAS, this new regulation, it's called EIDAS version 2.0, because we already have version 1 in place from 2014, I think.
What has changed between those? Well,
ID wallets. Yeah. So basically, they introduced ID wallets as a concept. It was, you know, super interesting and funny, because as I said, we started 2 years before the first draft of EIDAS 2.0 went public. When me and the colleagues read it, we were like, guys, this is what we do. This regulation literally describes what we are doing for the last 2 years. So we figured out very quickly that, you know, we are definitely going in the right direction. And now we will have a specific regulation that will cover it. And so obviously, now, you know, we are definitely want to be as one of the established players in this. We are not going to be the only one. There is, of course, a couple of companies in around Europe. Europe is a big market doing the similar thing. We have our specific things, but we definitely want to be one of the major players in this segment. So yeah, ID wallets are the next big thing. We are at the stage where a regulation has been voted for in the European Parliament. It still needs to be published. Now, the process of publishing it will take some time. It's hard to say when will it be formally published, because when it's formally published, then member states need to comply with it. Some say May, some say August. I don't know, but definitely this year. Definitely this year. And from then onwards, each member state has basically 2 years, I think 2.5 years, to implement at least one ID wallet. So it's required. It's not like optional. Each European country will have to implement at least one ID wallet for its citizens.
You picked quite a niche, a market niche. I mean, from what you've been saying, because on previous episodes, you know, we often discussed, you know, how it's difficult for startups to pick a niche. You know?
They always
have to find that little spot, but it seems that you found your little place.
Yeah, let's create a pan-European identity infrastructure. That's quite an issue, right?
That's yeah. It is quite something. How do you work with other companies? And I'm going to use our company as an example. Let's say we're building banking app.
Okay.
And we're going to use only the digital IDs.
Yeah.
Or half of it. Let's say try half of it. How do you jump in here? How do you know, how can you, let's say, help us help build an app, you know, that's going to skip that step of, you know, complex KYC.
Yeah.
And, you know, so on.
This is the easiest part, right?
So
one IT team talking to the other IT team, this is usually very, very frictionless and very quick. So, you know, basically depends on what you're developing. If you're developing for your client a mobile app, which you probably are, right? Then you can get our SDK, which integrates around, wraps around our API. And you can quickly, you know, just push it into your application stack and start, and the whole KYC process basically boils down to just a couple of calls where we take over and our process does everything from that point onwards. Some of the technology we use is, of course, our own. Some of it also licensed because, you know, it's a super complex space. We don't do everything by ourselves. For example, you know, face matching is a very typical example. We're not going to build our own face matching algorithms. Doesn't make sense. Yeah, basically, you know, if you're doing a mobile app, you get an SDK for major platforms. You integrate it into your mobile app, and that's it. If you are creating a web application, right, then you get direct access to API, and you can integrate it into your web app as well. The problem is usually definitely not there. There is no problem there. There's no problem anywhere, but the thing that slows down a lot the whole process is talking to a client what the client actually needs and wants. Because in order to digitally onboard people and to give them digital products, you need to have a digital product, right? So everything else needs to be digitalized for you to be able to create a fully automatic, fully digital product. And that's where the problem is. That's why, you know, we spend a lot of time with the clients talking, consulting, and basically that's why our sales cycle is slow. Because many companies want to, you know, provide a digital product, but their backend is not ready yet. So we have to
work. Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. Yeah. You know, what's your backend like? Probably a huge amount of data?
If I would need to, I wouldn't just stress the data part. If I would need to use one word, then I would definitely use secure, right? Mm-hmm. Because we are all, as a company, we are all about security. We store personal data from people, and our promise to our users, to citizens, our promise to them is we will not abuse the data that you have in your wallets. So if you have the data in your wallet, we as Adentium cannot read it without your consent. Although it's stored on our cloud, but we cannot access it without your explicit consent. And even let alone a client, you know, nobody can access your private data that you stored in your wallet. So your identity is known only to you, not to us. This is kind of funny, right? For example, at the moment we have around 70,000 ID wallets. Most of them we believe are in Croatia because we have already opened Slovenia. So our Slovenian citizens are also creating ID wallets. Hopefully one more country very soon. But, you know, to be perfectly honest, we cannot be sure how many people from each region have our ID wallets because we don't know anything about them. We just know the number. We have so many wallets.
I have a digital ID. I have a private key. Yes. That access the public key, but yeah, you cannot see that.
Exactly. So, you know, the whole thing, how it works is, you know, from a security perspective, quite simple. Every time you want to share your data with someone from your wallet, so you onboard to a bank, for example, right? You want to take a loan and the bank asks, well, who you are, right? Give me some data because we need to make a contract. We need to put a loan header, the header of the loan contract, who you are and all the basic data. So the bank asks who you are, right? And what you do is you enter your ID wallet PIN, which is a PIN that you have defined, which is stored in a secure element, which is the baseline to create your private key, right? And with that PIN, we use the private key to decrypt the data that the bank has.
So everything's encrypted, yeah.
Yeah, and re-encrypt, and those milliseconds, re-encrypt it with the key from the bank. So only for those couple of milliseconds in memory, the data is being re-encrypted in a secure environment. So a secure environment means something very, it's not just, you know, a word. In security, it means a trusted security module, which is certified, blah, blah, blah. So it, the data never exits this module. And basically, nobody can read the data from your wallet, nor the data that is being sent to the bank. That's how it works.
So you actually have the data, but you cannot read it. Exactly. That's how you protect everything.
Yes, exactly.
Because, well, you know, that I was curious about that. You know, usually when you, let's say, have a fintech app, whatever, a crypto app, I usually ask myself when I was, you know, opening my account, where is my info, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's holding the photo,
exactly,
of my ID?
Exactly.
It's probably them.
Exactly.
And then, you know, exactly, then what happened last year is some of the, when all the crisis in the software industry and fintech sector started, when some of the crypto exchanges failed, you know, what happened to that data? You know, that's a big question.
That's a big question. And, you know, it's a funny thing. This privacy is a really funny thing because, you know, people are like, whoa, I don't want to give my data. I want to protect my privacy. But, you know, dude, you're taking a picture of every meal you have when you are, you know, on vacation.
Yeah, Facebook, Instagram.
Yeah, you know, you've already shared all data about yourself. It's out there, you know. You can buy probably a database of Croatian personal ID numbers because they have been leaked. There were a couple of big leaks in Croatia in the last couple of years. In those leaks, you know, there was personal ID number, your address, your phone number. So what are we talking about, right? The data is already out there. The point is to create a technology to start protecting it and getting it back for the next 10, 15, 20 years so that the data stops being out there and to regulatory ask for all of those who have it illegally to delete it, right? So it's a big, it's a long term, it's a strategy, you know, it's not operational, it's a strategic thing. We need as a society to kind of take control of our privacy back.
Yeah, because 10, 15 years ago, you know, when people were opening social media accounts, nobody was asking themselves, you know, about privacy.
And, you know, one thing that, you know, I would just like to mention that kind of pops to my head right now, with recent developments of AI and these models that allow you to basically deepfake in real time somebody's face and voice. Now imagine what that will do in the next couple of years for an everyday person who is maybe not super fluent with IT, like, IT, you know, just your parents, or maybe an average person above 45, I don't know, you know, right? So you have this, you have ID data that is out there because it got hacked. I know I can get probably most of the data about you, which should be on your ID card, from some sources that I buy illegally on dark web, right? So I can very likely create an ID card about presenting myself as you, and I can probably very likely find your face somewhere on Facebook, and then I can create a deepfake with your face and your voice, right? So, you know, I just call your parents and I say, look, I'm somewhere in London, I need, can you please send me 200 euros? I have a problem, blah, 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 you know? So, you know, the amount of attacks is going to grow significantly, and it's a big wave in front of us.
Banks, yeah, there are going to be some smart
thieves. Exactly. And the banks are already feeling it because there's new attack vectors at the moment happening to some of the, most of the major banks. And now, you know, people are starting to figure out, well, damn, you know, the classical two-factor authentication is not good enough. We need biometrics. We need ID wallets as a society.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite scary.
It's quite scary. Yeah, it's quite scary.
What you're saying. So you also have to be compliant with GDPR.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I mean, this is like a given. This is a given. We absolutely need to be compliant with GDPR because in essence, the personal data is stored at our service. You know, let's forget about the thing that we cannot access it, but formally it's there, you know? So yeah, we need to prove that what we are saying is right, is true. I mean, that was not very difficult to certify with. After we got certified with ISO 27001, which is basically a certificate that proves that we are managing IT security with best industry practices, right? So if you have a ISO 27001 certificate, this basically means that somebody audits you every year and says, yeah, okay, these guys are doing everything they can with best industry practices for their IT management to be secure. So for the processes within the company to be secure. Now, there is an extension of that certificate, which is ISO 27701 certificate, which says the personal data that this company has is being managed in the best possible manner by industry standards. Now, we have been certified with this standard as well for the last 2 years. We were the first one in Croatia to receive it, this 27,701. And to be quite honest, it was easy, very easy for us to get this certification, because once we explained to the auditors the thing that I explained it to you, the how the personal data is stored within the wallets and which we cannot access, he was like, well, there's nothing much more that I can ask you. He checked the security modules. He checked how, if this is so, as we are saying it is, he checked the logs and everything, and that's it.
So everything's sensitive.
Yeah, exactly. Everything is sensitive.
To wrap it up, what are your hopes? What's going to happen in the next couple of years? What do you think? What do you hope that's, going to develop even more?
Well, obviously, I would really like for this European strategy to be true. I would like for eIDAS 2.0 to take off. I would like for companies to speed up with their digitalization. Obviously, I would like for them to use our services because I think they are good and they it's not just, sales pitch. They truly do help digitalization. And also, I hope that, people will realize that we are the good guys, right? Because, sometimes some people just say, you're going to be the ones, you're going to abuse our data, you're going to sell it.
Sell it, yeah.
You're going to sell. Well, the bank does not give away your deposit money because there would be no bank anymore, right? The first time they would spend your money, and you would come to a bank, I want to, withdraw my deposit. If the bank would say, well, there's no money there, that would not be a bank for a very long time.
The ones who are going to abuse your info are, yeah, a phishing mail, from, let's say, a Nigerian prince, send me all your data. They're going to abuse your data.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, so basically what we are hoping is that, society will realize that we are the good guys and we are trying to help them to take control of their privacy back, because it's already lost. Now we are trying to take it back.
Right, so it's definitely something that's going to require a lot of work.
Yes.
There's still a lot of work ahead.
Yes. Yeah.
To prove that digital IDs are the future, that we're going to need them, and they're going to help us in our everyday lives.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much streamline a lot of processes.
The whole point is to simplify the lives, the everyday life, so that you don't have to, get in the car, find a parking spot, then, just wait in line for 1 hour to just, show your ID card. Or even worse, if you are taking a car leasing or whatever type of service, usually what happens for most of these services is, hey, here is a nice little PDF in your email. Now, please, find a printer, print it out. There's always a problem with the printer when you need it, and then you need to scan it, and then you need to send it back. So, let's just skip the printing and scanning process and sign in digitally.
Yeah. A lot of work, but hopes are high.
Yeah.
Robert, thank you very much for coming here, for clarifying some things that might be a little bit confusing.
Thank you very much.
And I hope I'll see you again here.
Thank you very much for inviting me.